When you hear the phrase personal finance, what comes to mind? For our next guest, the answer isn't stress or pulling my hair out or mountains of debt. It's actually hope.
It can make us anxious when we think about managing our money in the short or long term.
But our guest says that the anxiety just makes things worse. She wants to teach us how to tackle the fear and the dread and harness hope to make personal finance manageable.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What stresses you out most about managing your finances? Does the stress and anxiety keep you from managing your money? How do you handle the anxiety? Have you found ways to be more positive in the ways that you handle saving, paying off debt, and more? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Emily Birkin is a financial coach and co-author of the book Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. She'll be speaking at the Bayshore Barnes & Noble in Milwaukee tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. She's also giving talks at the Wauwatosa Public Library on Sunday and at Mystery to Me in Madison next Tuesday. Emily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Emily, I know a big part of your writing and your work is making personal finance a more positive experience to people. I'm curious, what made you zero in on hopefulness as an important part of that?
I can remember talking to a friend several years ago, because I've been writing about money for over a decade now, and was saying, making this joke saying that his retirement plan is just assuming that climate change is going to make retirement impossible. You know, the oceans will rise, the temperatures will rise, you know, everything will be chaos and there's no way he's going to retire. And that's his retirement plan. And he was saying it in a way to be funny. You know, this was not, you know, defeatist or anything like that. He really was making a joke. But there's a kernel of truth in that joke. And I remember being very saddened by this joke. And I've seen other people repeat it. And I realized that what worried me about it was that it was showing a lack of hope. And so the obvious lack of hope is about climate change. You know, this friend of mine is, you know, feeling cynical about our ability to make changes to improve things in the world. But there was also a lack of hope in terms of his ability to navigate a financial system that is confusing and opaque and feels overwhelming. And I realized that having hope, not only for your own personal situation and saying, you know what, this is like my retirement plan. I don't understand what I'm doing, but I believe, I hope that I can master this and provide myself with a future that I want to live in. That is not only makes for a better situation for your personal life, but it also means that you're doing the work on a day-to-day basis to improve things for climate change as well. So if you are saying, I don't feel hope about this, then you're not going to take the small efforts that you can do to improve your own situation and improve the greater situation. And that's whether that's, you know, a big, difficult problems like climate change, like, you know, warfare, I mean, hunger, I mean, all of those things. If you say, like, this is inevitable, there's no way we're around it, you kind of lose the opportunity to take some responsibility for the little portion that you could do. And then it also means that you are not feeling the hope to make things better for yourself. So hope is often kind of denigrated as naive or unserious. I know that I have always been a very optimistic and hopeful person, and there have been times where people will kind of act as though that means I don't really know what's going on. I find there's a similar thing happens when, because my new book, Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management, takes a very humorous and lighthearted tone. And there's this sense with humor as well, that if something is humorous, then it can't be serious. And in both cases, I don't think that that's correct. I think that when you take something seriously, you have hope, you look at it with humor, you are poised to be in a better position to actually affect the change that you care deeply about, as opposed to thinking that to be serious, you need to be cynical.
And I think a lot of us have probably heard some version of your friend's comment.
yes.
either said or heard things like, I'll never be able to retire or own a house. That's just a pipe dream. When we kind of throw up our hands and think that way, how does that translate into some negative financial decisions?
So when you're thinking, you know, there's no way I'll ever retire, then you don't do the very little things that you can do. So I worked with a woman once who said, you know, I'm not bothering to save for retirement because I want to enjoy the money now when I'm young. And I remember at the time thinking like, well, I can't slap her silly, we're at work. I was thinking like, she was looking at this as this huge thing that she was going to have to give something up and it was going to make things tough for her now. And she couldn't connect with her older self who was going to need this money. And so she was giving up the opportunity of saying like, you know what, I can't afford much, but I can send $25 a week into my 401k. You know, I can't afford much, but I can, you know, when I get my tax refund, put half of it into 401k or an IRA. And so hope gives you the space to find little solutions. And when it comes to any major undertaking, it's not one big push. You know, it's not a movie where you're going to get the group together and you're going to fight Thanos and everything's going to be fixed at the end. It's lots and lots and lots of little decisions that add up and compound over time. And so having hope is the way that you open up yourself to see these little decisions and these opportunities in the small moments to say, you know what, I have $500 I wasn't expecting. I can put $300 of it in my 401k. Or you know what, I got a raise. If I plan on 1% of it going to my 401k, that is going to make a difference. Whereas if you're thinking there's no way I can do this, you will never make those decisions.
We're talking to Emily Guy Birkin right now, financial coach and co-author of the book Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. Emily, something you write about in your book, a red flag that you mention is avoiding financial information because it might put a damper on your day. I know I've been there too. A deadline is looming. I need to think about something. I feel that dread and that tension coming up. But in the end, information is power, and having those numbers in front of you and understanding them is helpful. Can you talk about the types of information that we should be willing to look at and plan with?
So there's a lot of information that we would prefer not to think about. And so, you know, you often see this with money where people are like, oh my goodness, I don't even want to look at my bank balance. I don't want to look at my credit card balance. I don't want to look at, you know, what my investments have done as things have been a roller coaster recently. And it's understandable we have that. We also have the similar thing where, you know, probably a lot of us recently, as we're, you know, finally kind of coming out of the pandemic somewhat, we're like, I don't want to step on a scale after all the pandemic snacking I've been doing. Or even if you weren't able to go to the dentist for 10 years, like, I do not want to go to the dentist and find out what's wrong. The problem is the information is there whether or not you know it. You know, like the cavities are there, whether or not you know they're there. The you know, a little extra padding is there, whether or not you know the exact number. And your bank balance, your credit card balance, what's going on with your investments, that's there, whether or not you know it. And it is always better to have information and make decisions from a place of knowledge than to continue to, you know, just pull the wool over your own eyes and pretend it's not there. And so it may take some psyching up to do to get to the point where you're like, okay, I'm ready. But recognizing that even the act of like, I don't want to know this, saying like, you know what, I'm just going to go look. I'll take 3 minutes to look what's going on with my bank balance. Now, generally what's going to happen is that's going to activate you to do something because you look at your bank balance and you're like, oh my goodness, that I have to, you know, I don't have enough to cover rent. Where can I get that? And you start answering questions. But when you say to yourself, I'm just going to look, going to look for 3 minutes. If there's no problems, I can close it again. That releases you of the sense that you have to like fix something huge, which is why it's scary to get this information. You know, release yourself of that sense that it is up to you to fix everything all at once. You're just getting information. And having that information in your head at moving forward is going to be helpful. And it gets a lot easier to check that information over and over again once you've kind of ripped that Band-Aid off the first time.
We're talking to Wisconsin-based financial coach Emily Guy-Birkin about how to feel less dread and more hope when it comes to personal finance.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have any tips for making big money decisions, how to tackle debt, how to invest, making those decisions easier? How did you manage stress and anxiety when it comes to personal finances? Have you had those moments, like Emily was talking about, where you just didn't want to see those numbers? How did you get past that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett.
And I'm Dean Kinetter. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with financial coach Emily Guy-Birkin about how to feel more hopeful when it comes to your finances.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you have a moment in your life where you confronted your finances, figured out how to try to get them into order, maybe overcame that fear and anxiety? Or do you have a question about how to do that right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
And let's take a caller. We have John with us in Sauk City. Hi, John.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you? What do you want to bring up?
Good. Well, I was just listening and I remembered this little anecdote from one of my college professors in a calculus class. And he had said we were probably talking about compound interest or something, and he said it's easy to make your kids rich, and you know his point was that, you know, invest early and let that compounding, you know, build over time. Sure. And I just thought that was an interesting little anecdote.
Absolutely, John, thanks for the call. And Emily, something you mentioned in your writing on being hopeful with personal finance is that this is also kind of a responsibility to ourselves and others in our family, maybe like our children, to start planning mm-hmm. for the future.
To John's point, like one of the things that there's an adage that, you know, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time is right now. Mm. And I'm thinking about when you are hopeful for the future, that's when you plant trees. When you're hopeful for the future, that's when you put money in a 529 for your children in a 401k. And that allows you to take advantage of that kind of compound interest. And I think of hope as a responsibility, because hopelessness allows us to say, there's nothing I can do, so I won't do anything. Now, when people feel hopeless, like one of the things I want to be very careful about is, you know, when you feel hopeless, I don't want, you know, someone coming along saying like, you're doing it wrong. You should feel hope. I want people to more think about like, why are they feeling hopeless? What control do they have over that feeling? And what can they do to kind of reclaim that hope? And not only when I talk about responsibility, not only in the sense of like, that's our responsibility to our future selves and to our children and things like that, but also in the sense that it gives you, agency again. You know, you are have a responsibility. You have agency to make this change and bring about the world you want to live in, whether that's, you know, in a personal sense and creating the financial world that you want your family to experience, but also in the much more global sense, in what kind of community do you want to live in? What kind of world do you want to live in? And are you doing little things on a daily basis that can compound to help bring that about, rather than allowing yourself to be overwhelmed by hopelessness?
And one area in particular that I think can feel especially hopeless or intimidating for people right now is the housing market. In a lot of places, mm-hmm. housing prices are pretty high. And if you're planning on buying a house or maybe starting a family, that can seem like a heavy lift. I'm wondering, Emily, what advice you have for people in that situation that want a house but are a little intimidated right now?
So things are really nuts right now. I mean, there's a very good reason why people may feel intimidated. You know, we're seeing these housing prices just go through the roof. And, you know, people are getting priced out of houses. And you're also seeing houses selling with these ridiculous situations. There was something that went viral the other day. There was a house that comes with a person in the basement.
Oh, my goodness.
the new owner will have to evict them because the seller is like, I don't even want to deal with this this tenant who I can't evict. And so, yeah, of course, that's going to be really overwhelming. And so one of the things that I think is important is for people to remember the right house at the right price will come along at the right time for the vast majority of people. So if it's not the right price, then it's not the right house. And if this is not the right time, you know, so it is okay for you to continue to rent and economize in other places while you set money aside for, you know, to own a home later, or focus on other parts of your life, and recognize that there is no, you're not in a race. There is no finish line that you're trying to get to, like, all right, I got it. And I got everything in the right order. I got the marriage, then the house, then the babies, then, you know, and all of that. Recognize that you can do things out of order, quote unquote, and you can wait for the right home at the right price at the right time when you're in the right financial place and, you know, you're in the right place in terms of your career and where you are settling and all of those things. One of the reasons why the housing market can get so overwhelming is that it is much like the stock market in that it ebbs and flows, and people will kind of jump on things because they see, oh, it's hot right now, or there is a lot of demand right now. Now, obviously, it's not quite that simple. But for people who are just looking to get into housing right now, if you're okay, you know, where you are in your apartment, or even if you want to upgrade to a different rental or something like that, there's no rush. There is no reason that you have to get a house right now.
We're talking with financial coach Emily Guy Birkin right now about the value of being hopeful in our personal financial planning. And I want to go back to the phones now at 800-642-1234. We've got Terry in Milwaukee with us. Hi, Terry.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. I wanted to tell a short story about the importance of investing when you're young. Back in 1972 and 73, I worked as a police officer for a smaller department in southwestern Wisconsin. I was there for 2 years. I left there, and now I'm 71 years old. Last year, I got a call from the state retirement fund that they'd been searching for me because I had money in the fund. I asked them, well, how do you figure? They said, well, you worked for the police department in southwestern Wisconsin in 1972 and 73, correct? I said, yes. The woman said, did you know that they were putting money in a retirement fund for you for those 2 years? I said, no, I had no idea. They never told me that. I said, how much did they put in? She said, $356. My comment to her was, why are you trying to reach me? It seems like you're spending a lot of time and money for $356. She said, sir, that money was compounded every year. We kept investing it. You have $52,000 in that account today.
Wow.
I was just absolutely flabbergasted. When I hung up the phone with her, I called all of my grandchildren. I told them, start investing now.
Wow. Terry, I'm glad that worked out for you, and thank you for sharing that with us. Emily, that sounds like a great example of a little goes a long way.
It really is. That's an amazing story. I love hearing that. Something that I wish more of us understood younger is how the effect of compounding works over time. I can recall my ninth grade social studies teacher, Mr. Bosley, tried to teach us that. And he had us take the example of, and he chose two kids from class as an example, and he just happened to pick me as one of them, saying like, okay, so Emily starts working at age 18, and she puts aside $500 a year until she turns 40. And keeps it invested at X percentage per year. And then her classmate Joe starts investing at age 40, keeps investing all the way, and he's investing $1,000, and keeps investing until age 65. And they both retire at age 65. And Emily has more money than Joe. because of the way compounding works. And I remember that lesson, but I don't remember the urgency of it. You know, that was something I like, it was kind of in the back of my head, like, yeah, starting early is important. But it seems like because of the way that our brains are wired, we often don't really understand the urgency of it until we get to a point where we're like, oh, I should have done that yesterday. And so that's something I try to tell people, you know, like if all you can do is $10 every pay period, do it, because 10 years from now, it's going to be worth so much more than the $10 that you lost out of your each paycheck. But we have trouble seeing how that works. You know, in foresight, you know, it's in hindsight that it's like Terry's story, like that. It's much easier to see in hindsight than it is to see moving forward.
And Emily, in our last few moments, I know you and your co-author are on tour right now, talking with folks about Stacked. Where can people in Wisconsin see you?
So I am going to be at the Bayshore Barnes & Noble in Milwaukee tomorrow, Saturday at 1:30 p.m. I will be at the Wauwatosa Library on Sunday at 1 p.m. And then we will be in Madison at Mystery to Me Bookstore on Tuesday. And I apologize, I'm blanking on exactly when. I believe it's at 6:30 p.m. but we are having these wonderful conversations. There's a lot of laughter, a lot of good financial advice, and you get to see my co-author and I banter and really enjoy ourselves meeting all of you.
Well, Emily, thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Emily Guy Birkin is a financial coach based in Wisconsin and co-author of the book Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management.